I'll look to get it underway and see how we go, and we won't we'll sort of recap for others that join us later. Christina or Gabby, did you have a list of apologies?
Yes, I have 5 apologies. That's from Jaap Akkerhoef, Martin Boyle, Jokie Brecken, Irmgarda Kassenkaita-Budeberg, and Young Emily.
Thank you very much. And for those of you that have joined us, welcome to the 9th of May teleconference of the Country and Territory Names Study Group. Do I have steerage of the control of the... I think I do now. Sorry, everyone. This is of the Adobe Connect room. The agenda for today was just a couple of quick updates on how we were going with the survey of UNESCO member states, and also the progress report that I discussed that we would share with various constituencies in advance of Prague, and then mainly getting on to the main business of today's teleconference, the identification of issues, how we're going to work through using examples, the different types, the different representations of country and territory names, and the two that I identified for today were as per identified in the Adobe Connect room, three-letter representations of countries, and also the formal long and short form representations of country and territory names. Because we've now set ourselves a schedule of calls every fortnight or so, there isn't that much intersessional news to update or report people on. It's really a case of us getting down to the nitty-gritty of our work and delving into in-depth discussions on the different categories that we'd proposed as part of our work. As such, I won't spend too much time on the next slide, which was a quick update on the survey, and really that is, it's as per the news that we shared on our last teleconference call. UNESCO are just at the point of finalising their survey. Hello, who joined us? I'll continue then. UNESCO were at the point of finalising the survey, and as I'd reported 2 weeks ago, they'd very much taken on board the advice that we'd given them about appropriate diversity in terms of geographical representation of respondents, the languages they use, the scripts, and particularly countries that might have multiple languages and scripts. There is nothing further to update yet. UNESCO is working on that. As soon as we've got more news, we will share that with the group. But ultimately, the intent is that when the survey does go out, it will go out to the broader ICANN community as well by way of an announcement and letter to SO and AC chairs that everybody's aware of what's going on. The other quick update was progress report, and that is the chair is drafting at the moment. That would be me knocking the report together as quickly as I can. It's not supposed to be a formal call for comments, but I'm just conscious that we haven't engaged the broader community aside from verbal briefings that I've provided to the GNSO and the GAC and others in terms of something in writing that everyone can see as to where we are with our work, where we intend to go, and when we intend to get there, i.e. by the end of the year. So the aim is that this will be circulated to the group in the next few weeks and then go to the broader community before Prague, that is following best practice, hopefully a couple of weeks before the Prague meeting so everybody can read through it, digest it, and can have their questions ready for me or for us when we're actually at the Prague meetings. Now, being conscious of the fact that we've done quite a lot of summary and recap on previous calls, I wanted to avoid it this time, so in 3 minutes I think I've done so. The idea of this call now is to keep working on identifying some of the issues that might exist with country and territory names, breaking it down along the lines of the categories that we identified in the survey, bite-sized chunks, if you will. I identified this in Costa Rica as hopefully an appropriate way to go forward, and that each of our teleconference calls would address the issues one by one. We all know of examples, we can all identify examples of the use of country territory names which might possibly be a little bit inconsistent when applied up against... I'm getting an echo, it's just me. shortly. There we go. To expand the anecdotal evidence that we've seen before and the particular examples we might have, to build it up into a decent case study, a table, a schedule of examples that we can use as part of a final report that will add weight to the discussions and the evidence we hope to be putting forward. So for today's call, I'd propose that we would touch on two topics, three-letter codes and formal long and short form representation of country and territory names. And three-letter codes was the starting point. Just as a quick summary, they're broadly speaking treated in a range of different ways. They're allowed in the applicant guidebook, just not if they're ISO 3166-1 codes. That is that they would therefore be a meaningful, they would be a representation of country and territory names and couldn't be a part of the process. They could also be subject to government objection, and I'll get onto that later. That is other three-letter codes countries make that are meaningful to them but aren't part of the ISO list. Similarly, three-letter codes could be included as part of the IDN CCOD Fast Track. In fact, a few examples have been and could well end up being part of overall IDN CCOD policy, as long as they're a meaningful representation with non-ASCII characters. And, of course, they're not covered under CCTLD rules. CCTLD is two letters. We all know that, and that's not proposed to change. So some of the issues I was hoping to work through today was when we come to three-letter codes and country name representations, it's something we've discussed previously and was raised as objections and concerns by various stakeholders within the group and outside. There are already examples of three-letter codes that represent countries, and yet they are TLDs, .com being the prime example of that, and there's no proposal for that to change at this stage. And yet at the same time, the applicant guidebook sort of contradicts that, because no ISO three-letter codes can be used at this stage. So that introduces a specific level of protection, at least for this round of the new GTLDs process, which is above and beyond what has existed before. And that sort of leads to the question that I'd raise, well, could countries' attitudes change if they can raise an objection to three-letter codes on the ground of it being a meaningful representation of their country or territory? And is that a problem or is that not a problem? Am I keeping everybody suitably entertained at this stage? Is that making sense to everyone? It's largely a summary of what is, and we're working back through the processes and the current policy framework, but does that make sense broadly, or does anyone have any concerns with that?
It makes sense.
Yep.
Excellent.
No problem. Very good.
So this is where we start going into issues with the three-letter codes. Currently there's a prohibition on ISO Alpha 3 codes that might not exist in future rounds. It does now. It might not in future. So what does that mean for how those codes will be treated? Is that a problem? Is that a concern if that's how it were to evolve in future rounds of the new GTLD process? And this is where we start crossing over some of the examples that Heather had raised and circulated with us all and a few that I'd thought of as well. There might be some codes like .nic, .ben and others that would actually still, even if the prohibition on meaningful representations of country codes were lifted, could still be prohibited on other grounds. In the case of .nic, that is a reserved name, and .ben could be confusingly similar or could be adjudged to be confusingly similar to other, actually to other ISO Alpha 2 codes. I'll go into that in a little bit more detail in a sec. In addition to that, ISO is also not the only widely used list of country codes out there. There are others. The Olympic list of the ISO abbreviations that are widely used, NATO, ITU codes, et cetera, and of those that I've listed, not all of them are consistent in how they treat three-letter codes. So you won't necessarily see the same abbreviation for each country across each list. And that gets me to the table that was my next slide and the main example. It just broadly shows how one can't assume that a three-letter code will be treated uniformly across different policy processes. I've used the example of BRB, which was Barbados, and only by virtue of the fact that that is not allowable for use as part of the new GTLDs process at this stage, but that could change in future. And yet another commonly used abbreviation for that country, .bar, B-A-R, which is under the IOC list, would be treated slightly differently because it could be a potential GTLD. At least it is a common, relatively generic term in English. And yet there is the possibility that government might object to that code because it is a meaningful representation of that country. And the rest of the table sort of works through a few other examples where there isn't necessarily consistency with how they'll be treated. Certain ones may or may not be eligible under the new GTLD process. Others might be prohibited for different reasons. And again, getting back to the example of .NIC, which was one that Heather raised, it is the three-letter code for Nicaragua. And even if in subsequent rounds of the new GTLD process this were to be lifted as a restriction, it's also a reserved name. It's on the reserved names list, so that wouldn't necessarily be used or couldn't necessarily be used under current rules. I'd also identify .ben and then a series of IDN CCTLDs with the three-letter codes as well, and there's probably no need to work through them in any great detail. But what I was hoping to assess was the view of the group in terms of, well, is any of this a concern? Some names would come under, some abbreviations, some three-letter codes may have certain sets of rules applied to them, some may have others. Does this give rise to concern to anyone? Is this something we should observe? Is there any particular comment we should make about it? Or is it something that the group agrees that we just observe is? And that's the feedback that we give to the rest of the community.
Paul, this is Heather. Can I chime in?
Fire away, please.
I think there is something to be said. I mean, some of these are isolated cases, and some of them are going to be somewhat endemic. I wonder if the one that seemed to come up when I was looking at this the most consistently, I suppose, or the most frequently, was the overlap between the two-letter codes and the three-letter codes. And I wonder if that simply the frequency with which those issues will come up warrants something more than just pointing them out on our part.
You'd mentioned a few examples in your email.
Wait. Excuse me, this is Bart. Could you say if you're using a Digo and you're using the bridge as well, could you mute your speakers for the Adigo? Adobe Room. Thank you. Yeah, it should.
I think that's better. I'm sorry, Heather. Thank you for that. Could you provide a couple of examples? I'm sorry, you raised them on your email, but I think in case people haven't seen them, it's probably worth expanding upon those a little bit more.
Sure.
And we're still in the
back. Still have a terrible echo.
I reckon.
My speaker's off, so I'm afraid I'm not the one doing it.
Someone else's speaker. Maybe we can mute phones as well. That might help. No need
yep.
a speaker. Mute. Star 6 to mute and unmute.
Seems to be better now.
How's that? Oh, that's better. Good. Can everyone still hear me?
Absolutely, Heather. Thank you. Yes. Please go ahead.
Yes.
No worries. I think there's several different kinds of overlap. Some are purely a confusion basis, that you have two letters or of the three that are an existing country code. Look, that's the case for 98% of the three-letter codes, simply because of the nature of those codes and how they were semantically set up. There's a different kind of overlap in terms of there are some codes, the three that I pointed out in my email, and those were really just the first three in the list. I didn't go through the whole list, where there are at least two completely different parties involved in the code. So there's a total disconnect, if you like. So the Åland Islands, ALA, in the Alpha 3, if you take two of those letters, AL is Albania, and AA is not listed in the ISO code, or in the ISO list, rather. An example of three entities involved is BEN, which you've already pointed out in another context as well, Paul. Benin, Alpha 3, Belgium, and Brunei Darussalam in the Alpha 2s. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find an Alpha 3 code that didn't have some sort of a conflict or non-overlap issue raised in connection with it, which is why I put it to the group. Does that in and of itself warrant saying something more than there's an issue here?
Well, I'd be quite happy to send that question out to the group. Does anyone have any particular views on that? Because, as I contextualised earlier, there is obviously quite clearly demarcation of space here in terms of what have been deemed to be two-letter codes and how they represent countries in past. And three-letter codes largely has been raised as an issue as part of the new GTLDs process, because that is a category for exemption at this stage. Even if that category were to be removed, you would then have, as Heather points out, a possibility of confusion. Does anyone have any particular views on what that means or what the implications of that might be?
Paul, it's Annabeth here. Can you hear me?
Hi, Annabeth.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. As long as it is the ISO 31663 codes, that they are all representations of country and territories, the same as the two-letter codes, but just one letter more. And just the scenario that could be for a lot of countries, if the Dutch two-letter code already is a CC representing the country, and then if the three-letter codes that have only one more letter will be a GTLD and registered freely with and representing the same country with a different policy from a different system, that would be very confusing for the users. Like if just from our sake, .no, Norway, CC, and then if it's a GTLD, .nor, register for somewhere else, for someone else anywhere in the world, and also use it as a representation for Norway.
Well, that's right. So what you're saying is it's not just, I think we're taking it beyond inconsistency between, potential confusion between Alpha 2 and Alpha 3 codes in the ISO list and just general issues of confusion.
Yeah.
And I think everyone has already sort of seen that in terms of the implementation of at least anecdotal evidence in terms of what has happened with .co and .com. There have been a few examples there in terms of what's happened, but it extends beyond the ISO list as an issue and Alpha 2 and Alpha 3 codes, and it is something that will, even if that protection were to be removed as part of the process, subsequent rounds of the new GTLD process, we would still end up with potential confusion, and I think that's something worth flagging. Heather, I think you were suggesting that it's more than just saying this is one of the potential areas of confusion. It's actually quite a substantial one. Is that right?
Yes. I think, and I could take the time to do it, but I haven't yet done it. I think you would have difficulty finding a code in that list, which is what, 250-odd codes long, to find an instance where there isn't some sort of confusion. And that alone, the scope, the breadth of the problem suggests that this is a legitimate confusion issue across the board, not simply for a handful of codes, but as a general matter.
I have to apologize here. I've been studiously ignoring my boss, who has his hand up in the Adobe Connect room. Chris, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I that's very nice of you to let me speak. I just wanted to make a couple of points. First of all, there's a mismatch here between the two-letter code list and the three-letter code list. The two-letter code list is protected even if they haven't been issued yet. So all combinations of two characters in ASCII are protected against confusing similarity at the IDN, in the IDN space. Back to the three-letter codes, there's currently a protection in the guidebook that existing, and it's only existing three-letter codes that are assigned to countries are not allowed. So I'm not suggesting that necessarily means anything, but it's worth remembering. The second thing is, I think you need to look at layers of confusion. Annabeth's point about a three-letter code being issued as a GTLD and operated, as if it is that country, is a perfectly valid one. But it would be challenging, in my view, to take a stance that said that the Alberta Unicycle Society should not be entitled to apply for AUS. Because it's about the layer of confusion. There would be no confusion when you went to the website, one assumes, because you'd find a website full of unicycles. But the question you need to ask is whether the mere use of AUS as an address is confusing. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. And that gets back to some of the points that we've discussed previously. I think what Chris had touched on first there about protections for all possible combinations of two-letter codes is well appreciated. With three-letter codes, well, it's only existing ones that are currently protected. That sort of gets back to earlier discussions we had about historical and future names and how it would be extremely problematic to protect those and even to develop any policy around that. In terms of layers of confusion, yes, the point's well taken that there is absolutely no reason why AUS under the current rules, using Chris's example, couldn't be registered couldn't be applied for and operated by a particular group, unless, of course, there were objection from the Australian government, because under the current rules they could do so, and appropriately so. But that's not to say that that will be part of the process in subsequent rounds of new GTLD applications. And that really is getting to the nub of the purpose of this study group, to make observations of how the names are used, the different layers of confusion that might exist, and particularly the one letter off is a valid one that might cause some concern. There is evidence out there in the market when it comes to .com and .co and how that launch has gone and how that has resulted in consumer confusion. It's entirely reasonable to assume that one letter, the difference, could reasonably result in some sort of confusion in future processes. That's not our purpose. It is not our purpose to say that is a bad thing, if that will automatically happen and therefore we need to do something to prevent it happening, but rather just to observe that that might be a possibility. And is that something the community more broadly needs to consider? Were there any other particular comments that people had to offer on the three-letter code list? We haven't gone into it too much and hadn't heard from you yet, but was there anything that I'd missed? Did you feel there was anything?
Oh, I think you captured it very nicely.
Yeah. And, look, I did just throw in some of the IDN CCTLDs for Serbia, Kazakhstan, and Ukraine just because they are actual examples or examples going through the delegation process in terms of they are three-letter representations of country codes currently. So it just means that three-letter codes fit into a whole bunch of baskets. They may well be new GTLDs and could be prohibited as a representation of country codes and also be included in the IDM process. And I think the overall summary and what I'm trying to work towards is, as it currently stands, the snapshot for this particular item, and acknowledging that the survey we've got UNESCO working on at the moment covers 10 or 11 different issues, for this particular one, I think the point is that we're saying that there are a number of ways, there are a number of slots that these things could fit into, as exemplified by the table I've got up there in the presentation, where the codes don't necessarily fit into one basket neatly. And that's just an observation to make, not necessarily a criticism or a comment. And noting in particular what Heather had said about potential confusion between two and three-letter codes and the potential for confusion to exist even if current protections were to be removed in future rounds of the GTLD process. The second one I wanted to work on was just quickly cover off on long and short form names of countries and territories. This sounds like a relatively simple and straightforward process and a presentation, representation of country names, and generally is referred to as official names for most countries, except for those that don't have the concept of official names. And traditionally within ICANN, there haven't been historical protections, but mechanisms have been put in place as part of the applicant guidebook, and that is the long and short form name as listed in ISO 3166. They will not be used as part of, or they will be prohibited as part of the first round. It's actually limited to ISO references, and that should be fine, but one thing I have to admit that I haven't devoted a lot of time to considering is are there any references, are there any ways in which countries and territories refer to themselves, either in the long form, so Commonwealth of Australia, or short form, Australia, which are not consistent with the ISO reference. And currently the protections are very broad in the applicant guidebook, referring to representations of that country and territory name in all languages. Now, is that written or spoken or native or indigenous or 250 written indigenous languages in Australia, et cetera, none of which would actually refer to the term Australia, but is there a potential for this to cause confusion or inconsistency down the track? I haven't actually thought a lot about that particular one, but I was just wondering, I'm not sure, does anyone have any examples out there in terms of whether there could be confusion around this? It's not something that people need to answer now, it's just something I'm throwing out there, that one would assume that the official long or short form name of a country would be relatively straightforward and well identified, but once you then multiply that into X number of languages, is there any possible confusion down the track? I haven't come up with any examples, but again, as part of working through our methodology, this would be something worth considering, and if anybody comes up with any examples, I would welcome them.
Paul, this is Bart.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think, say, answering that question is almost impossible. Depending on the list you're using what our language is, I've uncovered some of these lists, and there are at least 7,000 or 7,500 different languages already. So it becomes an inherent complex problem. And there are also lists which are even broader that go up to 17,000 different languages. So it's impossible to answer your question.
Oh, I well understand that, but I think I was specifically poking my finger at the applicant guidebook in terms of in all languages. It wasn't my, I wasn't being vague intentionally, but rather referring to the vagaries of the language in that document. It refers to all languages. And consistent with what we've been trying to work through in this study group, are there any examples? Is there an example that someone can come up with? I acknowledge fully that 7,000 languages, or possibly 17,000, would be very hard to work through. But and that in itself is an observation, to say that there are that many languages out there. We've got to be careful with what we use and the language that we use referring to languages.
Maybe this is Bart again. So maybe you can turn the problem around a bit. Because there is a protection in all these languages, and depending on, say, again, with IDNs involved, etc., then you have another issue that at the end of the day, you say somebody might apply not knowingly or not knowing that it is, for instance, especially in IDNs, that it is a long or short form name of a country, and then it slips through. So that it's almost an impossible threshold to monitor.
Well, that's right. I completely agree with you, Bart. If we were able to identify an example now, and I'm conscious that in everything we've worked through before previously, the historical names, the potential future names, the three-letter codes, we've been able to come up with meaningful examples that will give everyone an aha moment because they can understand what we're getting at. In this particular case, it is a lot more difficult because we don't know what the problem is until the problem arises. So I completely agree with that. If someone were able to come up with one example, that would be fantastic. But as a general observation, I think the default position of the study group would be just to observe that this will be a significant problem that no one will know the scope of until a particular issue arises.
Yeah.
So completely agree with you there. The next slide that I covered off in terms of long and short form names was that they can currently, of course, be included as part of the fast track process because, well, as long as they're a meaningful representation and have one non-ASCII character. But, of course, the limitations of that process is something we've talked about before, is that there will only be one language, one IDN CCLD as part of the fast track process per language, per territory. And what happens with non-ASCII names that haven't been chosen as part of as an IDN CCTLD? So the example that we've used previously, and Bart and I discussed through in Costa Rica, was .RF or the Cyrillic equivalent of that for Russian Federation. Russia has not been used, and therefore would not be, which is a short form name of the country, but has not been used as part of the IDN process. Likewise, Serbia and Kazakhstan, that I used it as examples previously because they'd have chosen three-letter codes. So they sort of fit as not quite part of one process and yet not another. So again, I've sort of gone back to the table format in terms of, the Cyrillic equivalent of Russia is currently would have no allowable use. It can't be used as part of the fast track because there's already been one. Under the current protections, it wouldn't be in the new GTLD process. Again, this is just an observation. Is it a problem? It's just a question I'm raising and would generally encourage the group to consider how we would look at that. And is it okay? Is it not? And the ASCII equivalent, the ASCII representation of Russia, again, would similarly have no allowable use either because it doesn't slot into the IDN's process. And again, current protection, meaningful representation in all languages, including English of Russia. And there are still some, I threw in the example of Uzbekistan, that hadn't registered as part of the fast track process. And yet couldn't be in the new GTLD process either. You know, is this particularly a concern? Is it just observations that we have to make that these names will be treated in different ways and there are some inconsistencies? That was most of the examples, et cetera, that I'd had to work through. Were there any general comments that people had at this stage about where this is leading us or not necessarily automatically leading us in terms of our our deliberations. Yeah, that's what I thought. I agree. It is rather difficult because for the most part, I expect the study group to come back and say, well, this is a statement of what is in the ICANN ecosystem. There are certain things that we can't make policy for or make allowances for. We will never be able to fully estimate the range of languages out there and what representations may be and where conflicts may arise. And similarly, we can't forecast what the future names of countries will be and develop policy in advance for those. I think the struggle for us will be to develop some sort of meaningful input that says, you know, either this is okay, this is just the way it is, and it's something the community has to deal with, but going beyond that and actually providing something constructive, something that can either possibly lead to, you know, not necessarily recommendations, but something that could lead to a working group process down the track that will provide a more substantive protection, something that will be built into the next round of the new GTLD process that will be well thought out, because we'll have all spent collectively sort of 12 months of our time or more working through this, and one would assume that we'd end up with something that is better thought out than previously. So the community, particularly the CCNSO, has had the chance to consider this. We've been given the opportunity to think about what we would need to do with country and territory names. So this is the point at which I'm really looking to the group to try to give us some ideas in terms of what angle we want to take. We've got a proposed methodology. We're waiting on feedback from the new GTLDs process when it happens, just to see some of the data that comes through on that. The UNESCO survey will provide us some data, but we're really getting to that point where we need to get a strong feel of where this study group is going to go in terms of what sort of advice would be preferable for us to provide to various constituencies. And I'm just conscious that unless we start getting some ideas amongst us at this stage, we're just going to end up observing this is the way the situation is, and we have no recommendations or we have no suggestions. This is just a snapshot. That is okay for the purposes of the study group, but I am conscious that we do have the opportunity to come up with more if we feel strongly that way. In absence of any further comments, I just wanted to throw out one last example briefly, and this is one that would be no doubt close to Annabeth's heart, which was Norway, which is a particularly good one, and that's just because the way in which you could use .no or Norge or .nor in the case of you probably couldn't use it if protections for it as a three-letter code were removed from subsequent rounds of the new GTLD process, it would still be reasonably assumed to be a confusingly similar term to NRO, and of course .Norway and then Norvège in other languages could end up slotting into other processes. That's really all that I wanted to work through today. Taking it away from the examples that I've run through and the examples I've given, does everyone feel that this is still a useful methodology? This is a useful way through working through some of the issues that are out there. It's somewhat tedious. It requires everyone to sort of buy in and give a few examples if they can. But is there a different way that people would prefer to see the way we attack this over the next couple of teleconferences, given that they're only 2 weeks apart as we head into Prague? Is going at it topic by topic like this, and in the absence of any objection, a reasonable way to attack them so that it will provide us decent substance to go into our progress report and then our draft final report. Excellent, thank you. Look, I just got a comment from Annabeth there in the room that she's happy with the way to, for it to go forward. What I'm very conscious of is that we spend 45 minutes of me lecturing the group. I don't want to do that and don't particularly want to be just working through PowerPoint after PowerPoint. There are the examples that we've worked through for the most part at this stage are relatively straightforward. Full names, abbreviated names of countries and territories should be, for lack of a better term, no-brainers. They are what they are, and they're generally accepted. There will always be a couple of exceptions. Three-letter codes have a couple of quirks, but not many. I expect as we then go into discussing some of the other criteria that we have in the UNESCO survey, so that your country name in other languages or the way in which in your language you would represent the other countries as part of the survey, that's where it starts getting a bit more difficult. We add in a few more permutations and combinations. Hopefully there'll be something a little more interesting to work through there. I think we can bite off two or three on the next call, although relatively straightforward. I hope we can just knock that out because that will help give us something to work on and put us at a relatively good point when we get to Prague. Unless there were any more comments, I'm conscious we're a little bit early on time, but that was all in terms of... Annabeth had a question. Are you there on the phone, Annabeth?
Yes, I am.
Did you want to raise your question?
Please, go ahead. Yes. The question I have is that even if we're not going to discuss what happens with these names after we have finished our report, it is an interesting thought to give it a thought that even if we end up with not having the protection for a country and territory names in the next round, do you think that they will have that kind of protection as, for example, capital names and city names have today? Because if you look at this hierarchy, you should think that protection of country and territories are even more essential, at least for the government, than cities and capitals. So that will at least help that you need an objection, a non-objection, or a support to use some of these names that we have difficulties with defining and protecting otherwise.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting question that you raise, and I've actually consciously assumed the lowest level of protection going into future rounds. We shouldn't assume that what is there currently will exist in future rounds of the process. So it might be somewhat contentious from certain perspectives to say, yes, in the next round of new GTLDs, none of these protections will exist. But that's somewhat the luxury that this study group has by virtue of being a study group, that we can throw the ideas out there, irrespective of how they may sit. And that is to say, could it be feasible that country and territory names have no protections at all in the next round? One would also assume that means that there may be, and Avery, I agree with you, we have absolutely no idea what the protections will be in the next round, so therefore we assume there are none. And we're not doing our job properly as a study group if we don't think about the fact that, okay, if there are none, what does that mean? As it is currently, we can look at the world as it exists and the way the policy framework exists and see that, there are a few inconsistencies. We can all come up with an example or two, but there's been every single ICANN policy going back in history has had a quirk or two somewhere that someone can take issue with. But in this particular case, we can see where it's going with the new GTLD process. If you go into the next round and you remove all protections, there's a few examples that I've put in there that, for different reasons, reserve names are always going to be reserve names, and is .nor going to be a confusingly similar to .nro, which will remain on the reserve list, and that brings into question the reserve list, and that's pretty much set in stone. So it's just observations that we're looking to make, crystal ball gazing, and again, that's both the curse and luxury that we have. Sorry, I'm conscious that I'm reading through the chat at the moment. Avery, did you actually have something to add, or I'm sorry, set in stone was being a little bit heavy-handed. Anyhow, look, I take the point that that people are making there, that there are objection processes currently in place. There are rules or lists that are referred to that are currently in place. They're going to change. They may change. We don't know. And the group could certainly end up chasing its tail in terms of what we gaze into the future with. But as I said, I don't think it's unreasonable for us to at least take a step in that direction. And tying back to what Annabeth had said earlier about, well, what is that going to be like? How is that going to be comparable to other protections that are there for geographic names, for other geographic terms? That's a reasonable question for us to raise. Again, not to answer, but just to raise. I'm conscious there was a bit of chat in the Adobe room. Did anybody else want to add anything at this stage to the call? But what I'll do is I'll wrap it up there because I didn't. Oh, Avery, fire away. Are you there, Avery? I noted.
Oh, okay.
Hand up.
Yeah.
go ahead.
I was turning the mute off, and I get confused between this call and the other one. I keep hitting star 6 again, and it doesn't mute, and all of a sudden I say, oh, yeah. Yeah, I think the thing, and I guess I was getting a little confused on the conversation here. I think the thing we have to assume about a next round is everything's going to be up for review. And so
yeah.
If this study group and others have come up with notions like, you know, might be protected, should be protected, does not need to be protected, et cetera, then that will feed into all those discussions. I think that when you look at protections now, a lot of them were cobbled in by staff at last minute based on complaints from GAC, who had the power to make the board change what the DNSO had originally proposed. So once it goes back into review and this whole round is reviewed and new recommendations are made, one can assume that there will be protections. But now what they will be, how things will be classified, you know, the reserve name list is always under attack for please add, please subtract, and sooner or later something will happen to it. So I think that this group has recommendations that are sort of, you know, both descriptive and perhaps tend to normative without resting on current reality, other than to say this is different than current reality or this is the same, might be useful. And I don't know if I added anything or just added confusion. Thanks.
No, actually quite the opposite, Avery. I think there was a bit of reaffirmation and hopefully a bit of confirmation of what I was trying to get to in words considerably more eloquent than my own. And that is that we don't know what will be in the future. This is all a moving feast. But what I've banged on about in this study group quite often is that this is we have a luxury here that we can look forward to what might be, but we can base our work on what is currently. So we can look at particular examples, and this is where the UNESCO survey is going to come back and give us a few more case study examples. It may end up being completely irrelevant. It may just tell us everything we already knew, and there's nothing in the responses that we get back that gives us that aha moment that I referred to in terms of gaps in policy or inconsistencies in policy. It's not for our group to identify whether something is right or wrong or needs to be remedied. We can just observe that this is what happens when you plug such and such a name or such and such a code or representation into the policy framework and what happens to it, and does something surprising happen? And that's something that we can put out as part of our observations. But similarly, we do have a little bit of a luxury to go forward and, as Avery pointed out, assume that this is a completely moving feast. And this gets back to a couple of the examples that I raised. .nor is a classic one. It will not be part of the first round of the new GTLD process if there are not protections relating to the ISO list in the second round over the GACS collective dead body, I acknowledge. But even then how could you end up with one country that could be prohibited from that code because it could be deemed to be confusingly similar to NRO, which may or may not end up being on a reserve list down the track anyway. It's part of this confusion and inconsistency that we sort of need to give some sense to and provide a statement at the end that makes some sense. Avery, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. One other thing, and that's that we have one big gap here that we talk about, but I don't think any of us really has a clear understanding on, and that's what it means to be confusingly similar and how those judgments are made by the secret panel. Now, the secret panel is not secret because it wants to be, but because it's been constrained. But the kinds of logic they're using seems like things this group would need to understand in terms of trying to make any kind of, you know, descriptive or normative statement. And so I'm wondering whether one thing this group wants to do, and pardon me for waiting until the end of the meeting, the coffee didn't kick in until about 45 minutes in. Do we want to see if there's anything we can do to get a better understanding of what it is they're actually doing when they're deciding? Because just from the bits of conversation I've had, I've come to understand that it's so much more complex a process than I had conceived of. And it seems to make a lot of sense once somebody that's in the middle of it kind of explains it. So, but I'm wondering if we can somehow encourage them to educate us in what it is they're doing. Thank you. This time I will be quiet.
Mm-hmm. Avery, thank you. Look, I'm gonna take that interjection and those comments and break it down to a couple of elements. I note that when it comes to confusing similarity, and I've raised that two or three times on this call and the presentation that I've run, and in previous meetings that we've had, and largely left it with a question mark at the end. Is this confusingly similar? Would this be considered confusingly similar? So yes, to that extent, I agree. We can't know definitively that is or isn't the case. There's a couple of questions that I can ask and I can investigate and really do need to educate myself better in terms of how those determinations are made. But then the one caveat I have to add is I will be very cautious that we're getting close to sort of mission creep in terms of the scope of the activities of this group. I've luxuriated in us being a study group previously and being able to bite off quite a lot or head off in different directions. But if we can't say this is confusingly similar or try to press for a clear definition of this is confusingly similar and this is not, at least we can... We could raise the point as a group that confusing similarity is confusing to all of us and we need less confusion about it, if that makes any sense at all, that there needs to be clarity around this because, and by pointing out the examples that we've been discussing, there are significant stakes based on this. Therefore, everyone needs to be clear about it. We can't make a recommendation about direction or clarity, et cetera, but we can just point out... generally, as part of the broader community's understanding, which is part of our scope, that we can point out that it's a bit of an issue. So it's a bit of a yes and Yes, and I agree that we understand what is being done and what that means and how that might impact on the work of this group. We've hit the hour mark, and that was about the deadline we had for the call. Were there any other sort of final comments before we wrapped it up for this evening, this morning? Well, thank you, everyone. Christina, Gabby, are you there? Do you know... I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me because my Outlook doesn't work at the moment, but our next scheduled call...
Sorry, Paul, what's up the date of the next call?
Yes, the date of the next call.
I was on mute. Yeah, that's the 23rd of May.
Yeah, look, we're heading for about 2 weeks. What I will aim to do is try to send something very sooner rather than later. I'm conscious of... background noise. I'll try and send something out to the group within the next... few days that will just outline the issues that we'll try and bite off for the next teleconference. Really, just it's just working through these examples again, and it is the mundane, and it is just the can we come up with any more examples, the sorts of things that Heather sort of punched into the process today to give us a few more ideas as to whether we're covering the scope of our work adequately or not. It'll be another couple and possibly a few that are a little more tricky than the ones that we've covered off today. I'm sorry, I was just again covering the chat room. So again, I'll get the material out as soon as possible so that we can identify what issues we're going to head into next. The task on me is to continue working in conjunction with Bart on a draft issues report. That's an action item on us that... we will circulate well in advance of Prague so that the group can provide their comments. That should be relatively straightforward. It's just a statement of what we've done. And then what I'd probably like to do as well is start refining a bit more what we're going to do from here. I'm conscious that we are in that limbo stage where we will try to address these issues as much as we can before we get feedback from UNESCO, etc. But we need a bit more shape on it before we get to Prague and then as we carry on to the Toronto meeting. So, I'll send something out to the group that proposes some of the issues, some of the feedback that we've got on this call, some of the feedback that we've had over the last couple of months. And I'll get that out to everyone, and hopefully that will inform us for our next chat. But in the absence of any final remarks, I'll just thank everyone for their time and talk to you all in about a fortnight.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.